but maybe it's better. Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to be in this room and in this very nice gathering. But you're looking at a little bit of, this is the most recent sort of urban porn from Saudi Arabia. I'll show you a bit more as we go, but I mostly wanted to just offer a very elementary contemplation of what might be called medium design. And it's potentially risky and embarrassing to actually talk about design, but I'm kind of bored with just my own rhetorical reportage. Medium design, it's not what you think. It's not new, it's not right, it's not free, it doesn't happen, it doesn't always work. Maybe medium thinking or medium design is a habit of mine that's ever present, practiced in every discipline. An oncologist analyzes not just the tumor, but the chemical fluctuations in the surrounding tissue. Actors transmit information not only with their lines, but in a string of interdependent actions that are unfolding in time. Geologists don't just taxonomize specimens, they're reading them as traces in a process. But still, maybe this medium thinking is under-rehearsed in the face of more dominant cultural habits. And some kind of fatal error, the beautiful, soft, watery human organism accidentally assumes a habit of mind that loves being right. Culture's good at pointing to things, calling their name, but not so good at describing their relationships between things or the repertoires they enact. It privileges declarations, right answers, universals, telos, elementary particles. It's captivated by circular logics and modernist scripts that celebrate freedom and transcendent newness, and narrative arcs that bend towards a utopian or dystopian ultimate. And this collective mind that looks for the one or the one and only is so often organized like a closed loop. And since the loop that only circulates compatible information can't abide contradiction, it lashes out with a binary fight when it's challenged. And favoring successive rather than coexistent thoughts or practices, the new right answer must kill the old right answer, the newest redemptive technology will make you free, but the freedom of one group robs another of its freedom, and the fight should build to a revolution or an apocalyptic burnout, and cue the brooding music. So oscillating between loops and binaries, it's as if it's an unnecessarily violent creature, having eliminated the very information it needs, is often banging away with the same blunt tools that are completely inadequate to address perennial problems, contemporary chemistries of power. A bully is elected, a migration of refugees swells in number, a financial crisis makes properties worth less than nothing, an industrial disaster kills thousands, shorelines flood due to global warming, teenagers join ISIS. And if an economic and military template of causation provides no explanation, or if new technologies don't provide the solution, if the consensus surrounding laws and standards or master plans provide no relief, somehow a little sense can be made of the problem. And assuming that these problems are simply impossibly deadlocked or unresponsive to rational thought, even the smartest people in the world seem to stand with hand to brow. These are sort of the
annoying guest earlier.
Anyway, these are sort of hackneyed plot lines of our grisly humanities. The binaries of war, the chest-beating Westphalian sovereignty of nations, they all remain in place as the darlings of history. Homo economicus is allowed to upstage and hold forth. Rom-coms align with ancient folktales of a patrilineal society. Sci-fis align with ancient tragedies, and dark conspiracies foil our hero. Smart is confused with new, empowered is confused with free. and dissent, also adopting a binary, exists in a world of enemies and innocents. But since the world's big bullies and bulletproof forms of power thrive on this oscillation between loop and binary, it's as if there's nothing to counter them. Nothing to counter things like the orange one. We're under-rehearsed. We've only got more ways of fighting and being right and providing the rancor that nourishes their violence. So how do you drop through a trapdoor and engage the flip side of these logics? On that flip side, where nothing is new and nothing is right, there can't be any dramatic manifestos, but maybe there's a chance to rehearse a habit of mind that's been eclipsed. It's something you already know how to do. You're already able to detect, as if with half-closed eyes, a world at a different focal length. Rather than declarations and right answers and objects and determinations, you can detect and manipulate the medium or the matrix in which they are suspended and in which they change over time. And just as this medium design inverts that typical focus over of object over field, maybe medium design, that sort of half-closed eye, can invert some habitual approaches to addressing problems as aesthetics and politics. I'm an architect and an urbanist, but speaking to any discipline, treating anyone as a designer, medium design might use space to prompt some productive thought, to sort of model some productive thought about both spatial and non-spatial problems. So it's joining those media theorists now, you know, who are not bound by communication technologies and who are returning to elemental understandings of media as surrounding environments of air, water, earth. This medium can treat the lumpy, heavy material of space itself as an information system and a broad, inclusive mixing chamber for many different social and political and technical networks. So in the work I'm doing, space doesn't really need the screens and sensors of the Internet of Things to make its stiff arrangements dance. It's already dancing, it's wired, it computes. So even at a moment of digital ubiquity and innovation, I'm arguing, that sounds unlikely, but I'm arguing that space may be an underexploited medium of innovation, an underexploited information system, with the capacity to make other information systems dumber or smarter. So there's some obvious footnotes that you're probably thinking about that, you know, medium thinking, of course, references many people, among them the non-modern thinking that, according to Bruno Latour, steps away from hierarchies and ultimates into a space, quote, as vast as China and as little known. It's related to the focus on dispositio, dispositif, disposition that fascinates Michel Foucault or Giorgio Agamben or Gilbert Ryle. So it's dispositional or time-released. And there's also a chance to exploit the bounce of aesthetic practices and cultural networks about which Walter Benjamin or Jacques Rancière write. Or from J.J. Gibson, there's a sense of the affordances of things. Or from Gregory Bateson, sort of cybernetic holism aside, a sense of heavy information, as he observed, a man, a tree, and an axe as an information system. And also from him, there's a sense of temperament in the interplay of things. And maybe the largest socio-technical organizations, this is the kind of stuff, you know, that I'm looking at, these repeatable formulas for formatting space around the world, maybe I offer them as something that might be good to think with, because they're everywhere and nowhere. From the micro to the macro scale, from institutions to cities, they're too large or too widely distributed to be assessed as a discrete object with a name or shape or outline. This is more of this kind of porn. They don't respond to singular solutions or determinations, and they can really only be assessed by the activity or disposition that's eminent in their organization as it unfolds over time or territory. But in any context, large or small, designing the medium is managing the potentials and relationships between objects, the activity or disposition that's imminent in their arrangement. The disposition of any organization makes some things possible and some things impossible, like a growth medium. It determines what will live or die, like an operating system. It sets the rules of the game that can link and activate the composition of the organization. And maybe culture's spectacular failures, together with the underexploited powers of medium, inspire alternative ways to register the design imagination, sort of form making in another key or another part of speech. So on this flip side, stock narratives about new technologies and sci-fi futurologies and lubricated freedoms don't make sense. Instead, multiplying problems is good. Messiness is smarter than newness. Obligations can be more empowering than freedom. And you deliberately address problems with responses that don't always work. I'll say more about that. Inverting the authority given to declarations and master plans and standards and laws, might some focus on medium discover extra political and aesthetic capacities in indeterminacy, discrepancy, temperament, and latency in organizations. Since unreasonable politics easily unravels reasonable politics, being right is a really bad idea in medium design. It's too weak. It doesn't work against gurus and totalitarian bullies. So instead, medium design is, it sounds contradictory, medium design is indeterminate to be practical. Designers are very good at making things with shapes and outlines, but medium design is less like making a thing and more like having your hands on the faders and toggles of organization. It's the design of interdependencies and chemistries and chain reactions and ratchets. It benefits from an artistic curiosity about spatial wiring or mixtures or reagents in spatial mixtures, or a curiosity about designing not a single object but a platform for inflecting a population of objects or setting up relative potentials within them. So a comfort with dynamic markers, unfinished processes. So the dispositions of space are manipulated not with solutions and master plans, but with time-released, what I've called active forms, so that what one is designing not necessarily a building, but a multiplier, designing switches, designing organs of interplay that have an extended temporal dimension that allows them to unfold and remain in play. So for instance, usually when you're designing, you can only add, you can only add more built material. But if you're considering an interplay of spatial variables that adjusts an ecology of building, ebbs and flows, then you can even design the subtraction of architecture or the means to put the building machine into reverse. And maybe you could do that in places like floodplains or distended suburbs. So at the risk of trying your patience, I mean, I won't go into detail about this protocol, but it sort of imagines reverse engineering the mortgage that has been a multiplier of sprawl and even global financial disaster and environmental disaster. And all it does is just a simple interplay that introduces an interplay by simply considering mortgages in groups that are rated for their complementary or counterbalancing attributes. So it considers groups that reduce collective risk.
And it takes a little while to unwind it. It's a little bit of a game where each play allows the next play to happen. And anything like that protocol can itself be gamed. It's not bulletproof. But the interplay might have enough temporal dimension to react to changing conditions or to respond to the moment when it's outmaneuvered. So instead of a paradoxical quest for freedom, more empowering or information rich are situations that gain strength through interplay, through mutual obligations, through checks and balances and offsets and bargains. So an interplay, designing an interplay is not designing a solution, but designing something that shouldn't always work. So in order to be politically practical, it shouldn't always work. So designing this protocol that's indeterminate to be practical, maybe that's something like medium design. And it's kind of replacing the parboiled master plans that architects usually come up with. I'm also asking, what are the pop culture cinematic time-lapse documents that show these ratcheting changes? Or look at another protocol of interplay, completely different content, in the jungles of Kenya, or this happens to be the rainforests of Ecuador. We already know there's a strong relationship between roads and erasure of forest. You've all seen these sort of fishbone maps. While roads are typically considered to be conduits of progress and opportunity, they're also the means by which broadband is delivered in rural or wilderness areas. But they, in these wilderness areas, they can also erase the information that's imminent in cities and villages and landscapes. Again, thinking that space itself is an information system. So this little protocol considers an interplay between broadband, roads, and forest or jungle. So it's suggesting that it might be more productive to dial down roads, these gray lines, when dialing up broadband, the red radiating circle, to preserve the farms and forests that are a green information system. A green information system that also attracts resources for the cliche, ecotourism, but maybe more importantly for education, for global outposts of research and so on. So, but the point is that I was wanting to make is that here, digital and spatial information systems can make each other more information rich or more information poor, but here, changing a road as well as changing a bit of code can hack a telecommunications network. So while in a world of closed loops, organizations and institutions try to eliminate any contradiction or error, medium design works better when you multiply a bunch of problems. So it's sort of like Pareto's paradox, that game theory that it demonstrates that if you play a game with a low probability of winning, you will lose. But if you alternate between two losing games, each with a probability of losing, you can begin to generate wins. It's again this kind of, it actually works like a ratchet, as if the losses give you some kind of traction. So this is not an idea about finding the solution or finding stability or finding homeostasis, but finding imbalance, not fixed pools of information, but extrinsic information, contradiction, mixtures of information systems that can provide a wealth of potential to disrupt that closed loop or that binary. So maybe it's not really the existence of the problem or the content that's that important. Because maybe you're not interested in these things to do with floods or jungles, I don't know. But it's just, I just want to find a way to talk about designing an organ of interplay. So, medium design would then be something like playing pool, where knowing about one fixed sequence doesn't do you any good. But being able to see branching networks of possibilities allows you to see more information and on the table and add more information onto the table. So in pool, you know, you don't know the answer. You only know what to do next. And the player knows, to borrow from Gilbert Rupp, knows how. Instead of, you don't know that. You know how to respond to a string of changing conditions over time with an organ of interplay. So medium design, like pool, is a game also that's surrounded by hustlers. And it also has a currency in discrepancy. So to assess and manipulate medium, it's almost as if you have to cultivate a capacity to perceive in a split screen. And I'm not showing you a lot of the evidentiary work that I do on free zones and the kind of stealthy world of a stealthy and abusive world of neoliberal capital with all of its gigantic and sparkling infrastructure formations. But it's a space of cheating and sneakiness and stealth. And so one other thing that seemed might be something to offer about medium design is that that in order to think about it, you do have to sort of cultivate a split screen, to kind of straddle mental partitions that separate what's the nominative, what is declared, from the active and the dispositional. So I keep thinking that architects or designers, or maybe any of us, would be at our best when we use our kind of canine mind, that you hear in any language, the dog hears you saying, good girl. And they get what that word, sort of those words mean, but they would never dream of taking, they could never just understand those words. They're in the absence of a thousand other affective cues in the room, how close you are to the door or the dog bowl, or whether there's a leash in your hand on a doorknob in the other, or your temperament. In this split screen, kind of turning the sound down on declarations, it's easier to detect the difference between what an organization is saying and what it's doing, and how organizations decouple their messages from their real activities or their underlying dispositions. So on one side of the screen, there are stories about socio-technical organizations, the railroads, hydroelectric networks, blockchains, the history of infrastructure, is often comes with scripts about decentralization and freedom, almost all every time. Look at the sort of Ethereum blockchain. It's like comes with the most old-fashioned scripts of decentralization and freedom. But the real disposition of the network may be concentrating power and authority with a kind of universal ambition, or a dumb binary of likes and dislikes filters a social media network that purports to be information rich, that's the script, different from the disposition. Or a global network of Dubai-style zone cities facilitates not the free trade that it talks about in its porn, but manipulated trade. A centralizing power espouses a populist message. The world's superbugs and bulletproof forms of power are masters of not only monistic demagoguery and binary head-on brutality, but they're also masters of the split screen. So if you can't do it, then you can't detect what they're doing. Like confidence men, they know how lies work. And in medium design, just like being right is a really bad idea, a weak idea, In this medium, also telling one lie is a bad idea. But telling many lies works very well. One lie calls for reconciliation and truth. Many lies creates a kind of Teflon surface on which rationality slips and slides. It's unburdened by truth. It can run circles, run rings around earnest declarations. The superbug knows how to make words dance around and fascinate in the absence of meaning and information. Lies are everywhere, animated, in color, lubricated, they insulate. And the discrepancy that others are futilely trying to reasonably reconcile is the raw material of fully mediated rumor and contagious fictions that batter the walls, work the back channels with stunning success. So it's not what the lies say, it's how they bounce that's important. And the superbug becomes, in that way, pure medium, you know, activity divorced from content or meaning. Like you remember the Obama is not born in the United States lie. The content of it is kind of not as important as how it bounces. It bounces really well because it's very easy to refute. So it gets repeated twice as much. You know, it's like knowing its activity divorced from its content. So design that has any hope of affecting change manipulates the organization, but has to, and this isn't usually a responsibility of architects, but I think it has to be that one manipulates not only the organization, but the narrative that attends it with moves that are potentially sneakier and more politically agile. And so it may mean that you come with the same kinds of dissonant stories that, however non-physical, have physical consequences. It may be a narrative that makes something contagious or generates a Teflon surface of its own. It may have an emotional message that renders some power more vulnerable, or it may have a surprising bounce because of its irrationality or outrageousness or cuteness or creepiness or violence. And here's one of those. Here's a kind of mixture of indeterminate interplay and discrepancy. This is kind of a soft focus ad for autonomous vehicles. But this may not be something you want to talk about, but it's an example that I can use to be quite concrete. Automated vehicles are touted as the means to perfect driving, to reduce emissions, to increase productivity and all of that. But in this kind of pure embrace of technology, there's a boomerang effect. And it's just a spatial variable, simple spatial variable. So if cars provide the same kinds of hands-free ride that you get in transit, and if they're used in lieu of transit, so kind of like imagine every space on the train is a car, then even the carpooling, platooning, and some of these very smart vehicles, they would be very smart vehicles trapped in some of the most profound congestion. And to remedy the boomerang effects that are related to automated vehicles, our habitual cultural response is to look for the solution in the next emergent technology. So it'd be flying cars, that would be the thing. But maybe an alternative response that would be part of kind of medium design would be to alter our relationship or to rewire the network of the spatial variable that's in a spatial information system, a physical architectural volume that acts like a switch that's, when placed between existing transportation technologies. So a switch, a kind of intermodal node for upshifting or downshifting into transportation of different capacities. So designing a switch or designing that would be something like medium design. And if you really want to do it and reduce emissions and sprawl while increasing ridership and transit, you know, you'd also have to have the stomach for the spin. From the sort of sneaky story that you know, told in the next Soft Focus ad that portrays the seduction of switching. You know, you'd have to be able to do both those things to kind of get the unwrench the car from our cold dead hands. To observe organizations in this canine split screen, not only the stories and lies on one side, but also the oscillation between closed loops and binaries on the other. You can say it's also to observe temperament in organization, a potential for concentrating or distributing power as a potential for escalating or reducing violence. In the free zones I study, sort of graphically model cultures' violent tendencies to form closed loops that only, sorry, I'm trying to play something for you, but I can't do this play. But these spaces, they really do graphically model these sort of dominant logics that I was trying to talk about at the beginning, this tendency to form closed loops that only circulate compatible information and expel any incompatible, inconvenient circumstances that challenges the organization. In the free zone, it's almost always the worker. This is a forum that's been designed to come into host countries and have a different set of laws from the domestic economies for the host country. So it has streamlined taxes, no taxes, streamlined customs, deregulation of labor and environmental law. And workers are always on the receiving end of violence in that environment. An environment that's also ironically saturated with all these kind of best practice acronyms and bullet-pointed lists and mandalas and motivational aphorisms of quality management ease and so on that are in all of our organizations. A script that with your canine mind you can see quite clearly is very different from what's actually happening there. A script that's really... if one's looking at what's happening, a script is really only serving to inoculate the user against change. So continually closing the loop, squaring off in a binary against the worker. And while this global infrastructure space has perfectly streamlined the global movements of billions of products, tens of millions of tourists and cheap laborers, at a time when 65 million people in the world are displaced, somehow there's no way to move X million people away from atrocities in Syria or facilitate other movements that are related to climate or labor. No legal or economic ingenuity is available. The nation state only has a dumb on-off button for granting or denying citizenship or asylum. Again, the closed loop lashes out with a binary, this time against the immigrant. And the extra state layers of governance, like the NGOcracy, offer as their prevailing idea storage in a refugee camp, a form of detention that lasts on average 17 years. So really, the free zone is kind of the chief node for privileging movement of goods and people outside of the constraints of national law. The refugee camp is just its sort of perverse carceral cousin. So in the medium, can you adjust stories and organizational potentials on both sides of the screen in ways that are attuned to temperament? So in addition to declarations or confrontations, the designer might also make changes that are almost like the way a parent treats squabbling children, two little girls smacking each other. You don't try to parse the content of the argument. but you swiftly change the disposition of the context. You lower the temperature of the room, move a chair into the light, increase the blood sugar of one child, introduce a pet into the arms of another, so that the chemistry of the room no longer induces or supports violence. So while one stands up and makes declarations against violence, you also, in the split screen, have ways to change the chemistry of the soil. So, and in cities, you know, there are countless ways to adjust all the solids and liquids of the urban world to reduce violence or tension. Maybe it's something like material advantage in a chess game. It's after the game. It's beyond the market value. It's urban morphologies and topologies and relationships that embody potentials. They concentrate or distribute power. They have the capacity to include or exclude. And urbanity, the kind of information-rich urbanity typically relies on breaking loops and binaries, multiplying, diversifying its components, placing them in interdependent relationships. Compare a street with very few parcels to one that has many parcels and low buy-in and a large number of players. It's just a different wiring of urban space that filters and may be more dangerous or more resilient. So, but with regard to immigration, I'm actually working on a project now that I'm quite frightened about. I'm pretty sure it's a failure, but it is attempt at medium design, because there are many existing exchange networks in the world that support migration, and many of those are in a kind of binary fight with nativist right-wing groups. But I'm working on a platform that's kind of moving away from the loop and binary, and it's an attempt to multiply one-to-one exchanges. So it's a platform called Many, and it's designed to facilitate migration through an exchange of needs and kind of deflate the right-wing argument by networking and more robustly aggregating short-term visas for those some of whom want to resettle, but many of whom just want to keep traveling, you know, who never wanted your stupid citizenship that you are, you know, withholding or reluctantly bestowing. So I'm wondering if it can perhaps leave the right wing to throw itself against an open door. And it's trying to work with the exchange of many non-market potentials that are embedded in space. So could it be a platform of matchmaking between the sideline talents and needs of migrating populations and a multitude of needs around the world? So needs are assets, know-hows and have-nots. But maybe there's a way to encourage another kind of cosmopolitan mobility that's organized around intervals of time and seasons of life, a branching set of options that's, again, more practical and politically agile. But the dangers, my fear, how can I avoid some of the sunny one-world associations with the sharing economy, and how does it not become the very thing it critiques? Potentially allowing people to aggregate strings of visas so that they can be accredited in different ways. So could this passage be then anticipated and celebrated as a mark of linguistic, diplomatic, leadership credentials? Can it develop that interplay of obligations that's more empowering than freedom? Can it exploit indeterminacy to also be a moving target when it's politically outmaneuvered? It's called Many. It has a kind of a, beyond national symbols, it has a kind of, it's based on, I should have shown you more of this, but it's based on Kobo Code and Paul Makunas's, Jordan Makunas's spell your name with these objects, and Paul Ellen's typefaces and cuneiform. Anyway, if you could do this project, dispositionally and temperamentally, it's trying to move from the one, the loop, and the binary to a multiplication of the one-to-one and the many. Or remembering the amazing shift in temperament in Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus, when Roman authorities want to appear to be magnanimous by announcing to a field of slaves that if Kirk Douglas, Spartacus, gives himself up, that they will spare all of them. And you know the scene where Kirk Douglas is about to stand up and say, "I'm Spartacus," and Tony Curtis, his fellow slave, stands up next to him and says, "I'm Spartacus," and then one by one, everyone in the group says, "I'm Spartacus, I'm Spartacus." And it's that you know, potential is another one of those potentials to alter temperament. So this is the last little example, but punctuating events like crises and competitions and victories and defeats usually capture the attention of history and familiar cultural narratives. But in disposition design, if you're on the flip side, disposition doesn't happen. It's not an event, because it's ever present as a latent property. Just like glass doesn't have to break to be brittle, dispositional qualities are changing and unfolding. If an unsafe factory collapses or burns, there's an event to mark the violence. But in the spaces I look at, in the countless factories or industrial parks that don't happen to buckle under the weight of their own denial, there's no event, there's no drawn sword. There's only the constant aggression of blatantly imbalanced power dynamics and their drumbeat of daily effects. So medium design might also enhance an ability to detect and manipulate some latent potentials in the absence of event or declaration, the kind of slow-moving, persistent violence or the rich interplay of potentials for which there's no history. So if it's designing things that don't always work, it's also the histories of things that don't happen. And it might be structured more like an epidemiology or a branching set of thresholds and potentials for leverage that might be concerned with how to modulate violence in organization by making them information rich. What are the spatio-political reagents or accelerants in moments of this kind of political metastasis or remission? What are the "I'm Spartacus" moments? Might some of the world's seemingly intractable or unresponsive problems, the superbugs and losing games, might they respond to medium design? I mean, with an ability to detect and manipulate indeterminacy, discrepancy, temperament, latency, what are the techniques for a stealthier form of activism? Without being targeted as an opponent that makes systemic changes. Maybe that play both sides of the screen with messy, impure, non-modern mixtures of spatial change and the gifts and pandas and gifts and pandas and rumors and meaningless distractions and other totemic fictions that are so effective in culture. So here on the flip side, where right answers are mistakes and obligations are more empowering than freedom, histories follow latent aggressions, as well as gunshots. Messiness is smarter than new. You deliberately address problems with responses that shouldn't always work. And maybe you can steal some of the power of infrastructure space to design a snaking chain of moves to worm into and generate leverage against intractable politics. And like a really good pool player, you don't necessarily call your shots, but keep them guessing. So it would be like being too smart to be right. Thank you. Sorry, I was wanting to play that image for you, but I can't play it. Let's see if I can get it to play. We have to do a little switch at the beginning, and there's some media that aren't working. But I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. But can we have time for questions also? Just on the it's so funny. This room is normally getting heated and cold, and I know it's very cold. And I'm trying to make it warmer. But Keller, maybe ask some questions.
Sorry also for reading with my glasses on. When I'm using my own computer, I don't need my glasses, but I this is a different setup, and so
I have a question just about the sort of immigration project that you've done for many. Can you describe in a kind of concrete sense what that might entail or be?
Yeah. So there's lots of exchange networks for short-term visas. And this is a site that's aggregating them and networking them in a different way, and also connecting the dots between a few of them and adding more spatial variables into them. So it's aggregating some existing ones and then projecting, it's designing with them in a way. So it's we were talking about kind of losing games. It's showing how, the cities in the United States, the shrinking cities in the United States, kind of Rust Belt cities that, where properties are worth less than nothing, and so on. It's sort of saying, okay, that's great, but take that the way in which that property has kind of wriggled out from under a virtual financial abstraction, and is now no longer a traffic mortgage product, but is dirt and a house, and so on again, and can be part of a land bank and be aggregated in different ways. So it's letting cities trade their needs and match their needs to the needs of somebody else who needs to get out for a period of time. And then also saying, because there are so many people for whom the asylum and citizenship process means jail for 17 years, essentially. It's trying to see to make that more fluid, to see if you can aggregate strings of short-term visas. So changing laws, not to keep people out, but altering laws to allow you to, for instance, stay away longer before you have to come back again. So if I'm a doctor who gets to work in the United States for a year, or gets to work any place for a year, and I bring my child with me, if I put four of those together in four different countries, my child gets an international baccalaureate. So it's kind of accrediting and recognizing strings of visas for people who don't, it's kind of a fuck you to the, we didn't want your citizenship. Sorry. We didn't, yeah. It's what will be seen is just a demo of that. And it will then be working with a consortium of people to move it on into a real developed platform. Sorry, the long-winded explanation,
I was wondering, you brought up Facebook, and I'm trying to formulate the question as I go a little bit, but I'm wondering if you have an approach towards getting through that nature of binary and sort of like rage in terms of cutting through ideas in media. Because it's so much, I mean, you also mentioned Trump, and I don't want to dwell on him necessarily, but the idea that like all of the rage fueled it much more than even the positives, and like this whole idea that we're just involved in this constant cycle of people fueling the things that their long medium posts are sort of attempting to dismantle. And how like maybe this potentially, like even writing this a little bit contributes to that. So like how do you approach medium design in terms of just like media theory or communication?
Well, I mean, I guess it's just looking for those opportunities to to break the binary, and it means, I guess, I'm hoping that there's a way that modeling some of these ideas in space, because I work with space, it just might be a useful model for thinking about spatial and non-spatial problems, like issues to do with social media. But it would be, you know, like not squaring up against every weed in the field, but kind of changing the chemistry of the soil, like figuring out ways to do that, rehearsing one's ability to see the opportunities for doing that. And I'm wondering if kind of focusing on the field instead of the weed,
right,
you know, is a way to be more attuned to a million things that you can be doing all the time to change the temperament in organizations.
Sorry, just to follow up a little bit. I'm curious if you have a way, if you have a sense of a way to restructure media landscape. I mean, that's a huge question. It's not necessarily like exactly spatial research that you do. Because it's something I think about a lot in terms of like, if you contribute to media, is anything you say helpful at all anymore? Because you're all of a sudden involved in this cycle of people arguing. So like, if you're not squaring up against like one argument and just fighting with someone on Twitter or writing some New York Times op-ed about one specific opinion, where are the ways in which we can dismantle or restructure just the entire network of media?
Well, it's too obvious to say, you know, I sort of said something like this maybe, but the idea that Facebook is information rich is laughable. You know, it's not an information rich network, it's an information poor network. At the very least, some of what I'm talking about is that one will become accustomed to not thinking that information is in media,
mm-hmm.
communication media, that information is in embedded in other kinds of heavy relationships. That seems to be something worth rehearsing. So that you get hungry for more information by looking for more lumpy, heterogeneous mixtures of sources of information and of information systems, or you recognize more things as being information systems.
Hi, I have a question returning to the Many project. I was wondering if you see it as sort of an alternate form of citizenship or a sort of liquid nation state. I wasn't sure how you sort of envision the participants.
It does seem as if it, you know, those people who are, you know, anybody who's moving on it in any direction, probably going to be a citizen of a country somewhere. But it does seem as if there might be another kind of cosmopolitanism that can be encouraged here, that also comes with its own, it's a, on the side, it's a, either side of the exchange, or it's a kind of a no-tech blockchain, because either side of the exchange is not an individual to an individual, it's a group to a group, so you have kind of a, however thick your group is it builds kind of trustworthiness on either side of the exchange. But so hopefully that kind of, it's a chance to kind of compound more, yeah, make, like the cosmopolitanism that can be more information rich. I mean, I don't know if that means that this, you know, it's not, I'm not talking about any kind of post-national world or anything like that, But there is a kind of, you know, there are people like Apadurai and others who have written about the way in which, strangely, you know, at times of, there were more cosmopolitanism in times of empire than there have been since the nation. You know, the nation is the kind of funny roadblock, the dumb on-off button in some of those flows. So this is trying to get over that by not, you know, really making the citizenship a desire.
I just read this article about how, I think it was Alibaba, signed a contract with, I think it was Singapore, to like develop the first digital free trade zone, which I sort of made me think of the zone concept of the city, this like city, and I wasn't sure, I just immediately thought of that and how maybe that was a new wrinkle in this ever changing ecosystem of subterfuge. And
yeah.
If you have any comment on that, or
yeah, Alibaba is amazing.
Yeah.
I haven't studied it myself. I've sort of been looking over the shoulder of students of mine who've been studying it. So I don't know enough to say, because the way that they're operating, the way that communications happen, is not. It's not exactly like the free zone in its disposition. And I, beyond that, I don't know enough to. But free was always the wrong word, you know. I mean, it's whose freedom?
You're talking about like transit switches or a visa exchange or housing mortgage structuring. Some of those things sound to me like market design in a way. Could you speak at all about the relationship that you see between what might be called market design and something like medium design?
I've never heard of that term, market design, it's market manipulation, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of taking some of the germs of abuse in the market and like rolling them back onto, you know, like kind of sending them back onto themselves, like sort of seeing if that might be possible. The very things that multiply and make certain things contagious in the market, can you reverse engineer them? But with in my work, it would be with spatial assets.